I'm going to stand over on the side, I think. Is that all right on the mic? So that I can... I think that will help. That's probably one of the things that women are still discriminated against. They still think we're tall as men are. Usually you can bend the mics down. I want to talk a bit about action. I want to talk also a little bit about International Women's Year, with which we and other groups are active. But let me review for you some of the various things the Action Agency does, because perhaps you aren't aware of them. Besides having the international interest in the Peace Corps, we also have VISTA, the Foster Grandparents Program, and the Senior Citizens Companion Program. In addition to that, we have recently begun to find a growing interest in doing something about, insofar as we can as a federal agency, the vast panoply of voluntary organizations that exist. Now, most of you know, and it perhaps is an odd thing to bring up at a women's organization, you know that most of us who've been active feminists for a long time have been somewhat skittish about the whole idea of voluntary activity. And yet, as it was brought out at the Maryland Women's Conference that I attended, all of us there just about were volunteers for the women's movement. And as the Action Agency for Voluntary Action, we're trying, if you will, to remind everyone that most of the things that we care about deeply, we do get involved with on our own time, as well as perhaps, if we're lucky, as a paid job. And so we are now setting up a new section of Action that will attempt to support the tremendous variety of voluntary groups that now exist. Because I think for a long time, most of us thought about voluntary groups more, if you will, as the Lady Bountiful groups, those good deeds that were done by women who could afford to take the time to do it full time or to do it on their own. And yet it's very obvious that throughout history, many of the things that have to be done in a society, those things that make a society human, are in fact done as a volunteer or as part of the responsibility of society. And because we feel that one of the greatest complaints today is that our government is getting further and further away and more unhuman or faceless, we think it's very important to revive the roles of voluntary activity in between the government and the people in all sorts of ways. We also think that voluntary activity is a responsibility. And because some people cannot afford to take the time or perhaps cannot live if they do full-time voluntary work, we do have many of our programs which give a living allowance or a stipend so that you can afford to take a year or two if you want and volunteer. So most of the programs that I mentioned at the beginning do provide living allowances, not very fancy living allowances, but nonetheless, more or less, you can live on the money that comes in as a VISTA volunteer or a Peace Corps volunteer. The older American programs are 20 hours a week, and clearly you can't live on that, but the hope is that most of the elderly Americans do have Social Security, and the combination is then possible. We are also now talking about the opportunity for even younger people to volunteer in what we're calling the National Service Corps, National Youth Service Corps. And this is an idea to offer an alternative to unemployment plans that are being developed by the Department of Labor. We have tried this out in Seattle and are presently planning to try it out in at least one city and probably also in a rural area, where all of the young people in an area between the ages of school leaving, 16 or 17, and 21, who wish to have a job will be provided it. The Department of Labor will provide the bulk of the jobs, but there will also be voluntary possibilities which will allow young men and women to work in agencies, social service agencies or service delivery agencies in those towns. And if it turns out that this becomes a wider program, what it will allow is a lot of young women to volunteer, among other things, to the women's movement. So we think this is a rather interesting alternative. What it does is to give a model for young people. You probably remember when they were working on Head Start, they found that many youngsters only knew about four or five professions. They really had no idea of the tremendous numbers of possible jobs. And much of the youth unemployment would seem to be caused by people, young people, moving from job to job, trying to find something that they really are interested in. And we think the opportunity to do social service jobs, to do environmental work perhaps, to work in public interest work, is an opportunity for especially the less well-off who might not know about all those kinds of jobs that are available. This in some ways would be a junior VISTA. The VISTA program tends to enroll people in their 20s, although there is also a local program where you can be locally recruited and receive VISTA monies to work in local programs. And again, a fair number of women have found out that they can, in fact, get a VISTA stipend for doing the voluntary work that they wanted to be doing anyhow. And if any of you have that kind of interest and haven't looked into it, I strongly suggest you contact. We have state offices, and in most cities we have program office people running various programs. The easiest thing would probably be to write to the state or write directly to Washington to find out if there are, if you are in fact, for example, a woman I met last, about 2 months ago in Pittsburgh, had been organizing the Pittsburgh low-income group for credit cooperative. And that's exactly the kind of thing we like VISTAs to do. And now she's getting paid to do what she wanted to, which is certainly enough money to provide her with the babysitting, if nothing much else, but it's certainly better than nothing. And about one quarter of the total VISTAs, which we have about 4,000 now, are locally recruited. So that, again, is something I think many people are not aware of and something that is possibly provide a stipend for groups. In addition to that, we are developing programs with women's groups in particular on battered housewives and also on the displaced homemaker. Now, in these cases, we are providing, if you what we call technical assistance. What that really means is that we can provide small amounts of money to help you write up booklets or how to do something or how to get a job or what to do when a battered housewife comes in. And in the long run, what we hope to do is to have those books that you write available for other groups that want to start the same kind of thing. We're not talking about much money. Action's a small agency. When I came there from my previous job, where my budget, if I was lucky, was running maybe a couple of $1,000s a year, and I suddenly had to start adding three more zeros after everything because all the budgets are printed in thousands. It occurred to me that most of the major departments put three more zeros after their figures than we do. I'd like to think that each time you add three more zeros, decision-making changes. I rather think it doesn't. And therefore, if you can find programs that are in some of the bigger agencies, you often get those three zeros added on for the same amount of work as you get them without the three zeros from us. But we do have small amounts of money, and we are trying to help these kinds of groups. Barbara Mikulski, a congresswoman from Maryland, has put into her battered housewives bill, and I'm sure if you're interested, there are workshops on this here, has put in there a strong suggestion that volunteers are better at giving the kind of personal support than are the traditional agencies. One of the problems that happens when you have a large social service agency is that First of all, the person who's giving the service has so many cases, they're overworked. But I also know quite a few social workers, and most of them find that after a while they have to kind of protect themselves. Because you clearly cannot be involved with every person that you are trying to help. And I think that that may be the clue as to why it's important to have volunteers going and helping. Because you can emotionally afford to help a few people, but you cannot afford, I think, psychologically, to help a large number. You just can't do it. And so with this in mind, Barbara Mikulski has set up the bill that is now being combined and we hope will be the major battered housewives bill to keep the individual contact and to support voluntary groups that can provide that. If you stop and think, that's not awfully unusual. Most of the drug abuse centers run the same way. Most of the hotlines, the person who's really there providing the one-to-one contact is very frequently a volunteer. You need paid people to staff it, to see the volunteers come in and so on. But it is a different concept than hiring someone who is the major one-to-one person. And I think it's a very interesting bill and would urge any of you who are concerned with battered housewives to look at that and to see whether you might like to support it, because this bill is now, I believe, it's been introduced also into the Senate, and it's going to be coming up. There's been some concerted attempt in Washington to see that only one bill on battered housewives goes through rather than two or three. There's a similar bill up for runaway youth. And here again, the feeling is that it might be much better to somehow figure out how to put volunteers in contact with the youth instead of the social service agencies. So there is a growing, I think, feeling, first, that there is a need for the humanity in the government that probably can only be given by people volunteering their time. And I think there's a growing feeling that most of us owe some volunteer time to society. I spent a lot of my time in developing countries, and one often talks or hears about how in a village, when there's a death or a wedding, the whole village comes and prepares the food and gets together. It's a bit reminiscent of what you hear about raising barns in the Midwest in this country. Now, I suspect that it was nobody ever thought of not volunteering, but you can also assume it wasn't exactly a choice. It seems to me that that kind of expectation is something that has gotten lost as we begin to develop our emphasis on individualism in this country. And I think it's really too bad. And in fact, that kind of responsibility, if it happens, has tended to be given by women, and especially in the recent years. And I think that's why a lot of us are skittish about it, in the sense that, is that something that should be paid for? And if it is something that should be paid for, we shouldn't be doing it free. But I think what I'm beginning to feel is there are a lot of things I would never do if you paid me to do them, but that I think I would do because I wanted to do them. And I think that we need, perhaps, as part of our rediscovering of the spirit of this country, to begin to emphasize the responsibilities that we have in return for what we've gotten from society and the government, and that perhaps it is almost a required volunteerism that many of us ought to be doing. I don't expect that it should be mandatory at all, but I just think that there is this, I think we feel a need, I certainly do. I would hate to feel that I only took from society and took the money and took things and did not give back. And I know all of you have, obviously, you wouldn't be here if you weren't involved in a variety of voluntary groups because you feel very strongly about something. But there are a large number of people who have lost contact either with their community or their neighborhood or with their churches where many of the voluntary opportunities used to take place. About 2 months ago, there was a tremendous flood in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and the odd thing about that flood was that it washed mud into almost all of the town. And a variety of our support groups, like Vistas, went in to help. And someone said, well, wouldn't it be nice if all those bureaucrats from Washington went over and helped as well? And here again, I'm not sure it was exactly without, I don't know that we had a choice, but most of us volunteered to go and help clean out the mud for a weekend. And the thing that impressed me more than anything was that about a third of the people who went from Washington were not from Action. They were spouses or kids or carpool mates or roommates of the people who had decided to go because it was something of a thing to go for Action. But a third of the people were not. They went because they suddenly felt here was an opportunity to do something and they didn't really know how else to do it. And because I think that spirit is much more broadly held than many of us perhaps realize, one of the new kinds of programs we're working on is trying to do some pilot projects for short-term volunteering or weekend volunteering in a kind of example that we hope will be copied throughout the country. For example, many of these cities have real disaster areas in them. They aren't cleaned up, they're not pretty or anything else. There have been attempts from Lady Bird Johnson down to put parks in, but parks, if no one takes care of them, don't stay like that very long. And we're trying to figure out how, if we could mobilize a large number of volunteers, we might be able to help start cleaning up some cities. And perhaps doing something like making vegetable gardens available, or perhaps providing some other kinds of ways to keep open areas there, plant trees, something, to see whether large numbers of volunteers doing fairly unskilled work could make a difference. We're looking at immunization problems, as many other people are, to see whether we can help mobilize the immunizations for the children who have gotten so, whose parents have become so complacent that, as you know, a large percentage of our young kids aren't immunized correctly right now. And we're looking at other kinds of possibilities, perhaps even planting trees in the areas where there have been recent forest fires. These are all just ideas, but what we are reaching for is the thought that in our complex society, a lot of the small groups that many of us would have felt both the desire and responsibility to volunteer have been sort of pulled apart. And perhaps additional calling back on the spirit of giving and of participating may be one of the most useful things that we can do. With regard to Vistas, because they are stipended and usually fairly well-trained young people, although again, in Houston yesterday, I went to visit one of the Vista programs where there is a clinic and there's a volunteer doctor who happens to be 73. And we find that this is also not unusual, that some people, when they retire, want to do something that they probably can't do if they don't get a stipend. And there are a fair number of Vistas who are over 70, over 65. There are a few of the older people who are also working in the Peace Corps. And in all of these cases, sometimes the fact that there are elderly people enhances their ability to do something, because especially overseas, unlike here perhaps, older people are still regarded with a certain amount of honor. We look on the Peace Corps and Vista as, if you will, the sort of front groups, the people who are most likely to assist in change in the society, to try to help the majority of the people receive the resources that are due them, such as food stamps or Social Security or the weatherization monies that were made available last year. It's surprising how many people do not take advantage of governmental programs. In addition to that, we're trying to urge that groups that should have certain kinds of rights within the country and don't have them, that we would be pleased to help local groups when they do demand such things as better streets in certain neighborhoods and so on, because they don't have or don't feel they have access to the resources that should be there. Overseas, we are very interested also in working with the poor sector of the country. I think the Peace Corps is probably the one agency that delivers aid monies or aid efforts that actually reaches outside of most capital cities. And one of the things that's been happening in the development theory is that for about 20 or 25 years, much of the money went into large capital resources. They were building dams, putting in steam factories and so forth, steel factories, automobile factories, on the theory that if you put enough money into a government, the money would in fact trickle down. And development was usually measured on the gross national product. How much money did that country get? Somebody began to look at what was really happening. It took 25 years. And someone at the World Bank began to look at statistics and came to the conclusion that about 40% of the total population in most of the developing countries were worse off after 25 years of development than they had been before development started. About 40% of the people were better off, and the middle 20% were worse off until per capita income went up to about $100 per, which means that mostly in Latin America, 60% of the people were better off. But throughout the rest of the world, 60% of the people were worse off. And that's a pretty awful track record. Of course, what was happening is the rich were getting richer and the poor were getting poorer. The result is that there has been a refocus on how can aid help the poor. And mind you, even the World Bank and the United Nations development agencies and our own AID are trying to do this too. It's not an easy thing any more than it has been easy in this country. But one of the things that was still overlooked, in which I'm happy to say I played a fairly strong role in reminding them, is when you look at who the people are who are poor, the greatest majority are women and children. And that's just as true overseas as it is at home. And yet here again, all of those men who run the World Bank and the UN and the AID had not stopped to think. They'd gotten past the big dams to people,